Adversity? Bring it. The struggle? I welcome it. Snooze on life? Never that. I am Dave Regina, and this is the No Snooze Podcast. Come on.
Welcome back, No Snooze Podcast, episode 159. As always, I'm in the booth with a new three. We have Matt Real Estate Ramos, Claudio the Voice Valenzuela, and I am Dave the Body Regina. I'm really excited to introduce Matt Ramos to you guys. We're going to talk about everything today, from real estate, his journey along the way. Just off air, he was telling me how last year was basically his first property that he was able to close on. This year, he's already up to 14. He started and is now in the process of selling United Healthcare.
Healthcare United. Commonly mistaken for the insurance company, but yeah.
Healthcare United, I already screwed that up. And we're going to go all over the place. You know, he's got an incredible story. And Matt, I just want to say thank you for joining us today.
I'm excited to be here, man. And, you know, the what you got set up down here and what you're all about and putting out positive message, you know, it's empowering people. Empowers me.
Yes. You know? And I have to say, you know, we recently, since we've been doing these interviews, we've caught the attention of a lot more people in our audience, but they have been acknowledging the quality of not only the audio, but now this visual. So Claudio the Voice Valenzuela really is the mastermind behind the No Snooze Podcast. Obviously, I bring the content to the table. But without my partner, Claudio, here, I'm basically nothing. And off air, we were talking about how important it is to highlight individuals who basically can take your weakness away from you, right? So basically, he controls all of that. I tell people, like I told you, we have cameras, we have microphones, we have lights, we have TVs, and that's about all I know, and a lot of wires.
I know tons of wires, a lot of plugs, nowhere to go.
But Claudio, I just want to say to you, I don't thank you enough, my brother. So thank you. Matt, it was an hour and a half trip down here, huh?
Hour and a half. Should be 30 minutes, but leaving the morning, traffic, everybody from New York coming to Connecticut.
Yeah.
We welcome you with open arms because it's driving the real estate market
there
up.
You know? So there you go. What was the mindset like in traffic, though? Talk to me a little bit.
I podcast, man. I listen to Jocko. I listen to a lot of just various like business people. Bradley is a big guy I listen to. You know, he's got a very unique story from struggles in trials and tribulations to like where he is now. He's a really, really... big businessman, Grant Cardone, Uncle G.
Yep.
You know, he's the real estate guru, right? But that's, I just try to keep my mindset in a positive state, in the right state. And I do that by listening to the things that I want to consume and that's going to inform me to apply that information, either grow my business, grow my brand, or help somebody else.
Right. So you're currently a partner at New Era Investing, which is your recent company that you've that you've started. But obviously before that, there had to be like inspiration along the way. What is a moment, or I guess a time you can think back of, that provided you with that inspiration to kind of take these leaps in starting these companies?
Yeah. So, I mean, when I went through that shit in college, it was tough. It was like a lot of dark moments. And I just asked myself the question, like, what do I want to be in this life? Like, who do I want to be? Mm-hmm. Right. And where it guided me was, well, legacy, right? Passionate about my last name, passionate about my father's story. And I started a cleaning company, failed first year. You know, I had some success, but wrong partnership, ended up failing. Then I was in medical device sales and I was making good money. I was happy. But I was very content. And I'm like, there's no purpose for me there, right? I was average, man. I wasn't doing extraordinary things, you know, making extraordinary sales. But, you know, COVID hit. And COVID, you know, with every adversity can come an equal and equivalent advantage, right? So COVID hit and a lot of people were affected by it.
Yep.
Everybody in the world was affected by it. So I had a small multifamily portfolio and... I remember looking at my bank account and I was like, damn, I got negative $298 in my account.
Negative?
Negative.
They let you go that negative?
Huh?
They let you go negative?
No, I quit.
Oh, okay.
I quit. So, and it's funny. I took a screenshot. I saved it. Saved the day my life changed forever. Right. And a buddy of mine, he DM'd me. Not even a buddy of mine, just like a kid I knew through high school. DM'd me. He's like, hey, heard you're in healthcare, and you know, want to just pitch an idea to you. I'm like, okay, why not? Let's meet up. I'm not doing anything else. You know, smoking pot and fucking playing video games. Like, yeah. I'm not advancing my life at all at that point. Mm-hmm. I got a bad chick at home that wants me to hold it down, and I want to hold it down. Like, I want to be the father figure, the person in the home that's bringing in the money, that's providing and securing the family, right? So we met up. He's like, hey, this is what I'm, you know, thinking about doing, starting a headhunting firm. I'm like, okay, you know, like, I could play with it, right? Now, before that, a buddy of mine has a successful headhunting firm, healthcare headhunting firm, and he understood what I was going through. I had negative, you know, $298 in my account, and he was like, hey, listen, like, you know, I'll bring you on, like, I'll pay you $30,000 salary, and you can make some small commissions along the way on placements. And I'm like, okay, like,
it's like a McDonald's salary.
Yeah, but, I'm like, you know. You have to do what's best for you.
Right,
and
course,
I respect that.
Yeah,
you're
yeah.
looking out for your company. You're looking out for yourself. And I respect that. And okay, some people can see it like, oh, that's a bullshit salary. Like, he doesn't understand the value that you can bring somebody.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I can see both sides. But for me, I'm like, I can provide a lot more value to somebody. So thank you, but no thank you. And then 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later, I get a DM. And it's my business partner now who DM'd me. And he's like, hey, I want to do this. So I'm like, you know what? For me, it can either ruin a friendship or it can make my life. And he made a decision. My friend made a decision to what's best for him. And I can respect that. And I don't hold any grudges towards that. So for me, I'm going to be selfish and I'm going to do it. I'm going to do what's best for me. I'm going to take that chance. And I did it. First year, we were in the red, $30,000. I was working as a real estate agent on the side. So morning to night, like 11 o'clock at night, just like hammering phones, man. Come 2.5 years down the road, we're very successful. We're selling off, and here we are.
Wow. You said you made a comment about screwing up in college. So we were introduced through Sean Degnan.
The homie.
He's not the Degs to me, though. No disrespect, Sean. But his sister, Caitlin Degnan, to me, his older sister, was Degs.
Yeah.
So I got to call him Degs Jr.
Fair.
Or Deggy. Yeah, fair. He's definitely dunking me in another ice bath. Mm-hmm. God damn it. You guys play football together.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, Sean told his story on the No Snooze podcast as well. Great episode. Episode 156. If you haven't checked that out. But there was some adversity in college.
Yeah.
Right. And you kind of were a part of this, and, you know, you made some bad decisions along the way.
Yeah.
You mind exposing yourself a little bit?
I love vulnerability, brother.
Talk to
Let's
me.
Let's go. So, yeah, played football in college. I quit my sophomore year, came back, played, very passionate about it, kind of my life.
What position?
Safety.
Oh.
Safety. Yeah, I love giving the hits, not taking the hits.
Yeah.
Shawnee Deggs is a lineman. He's not proud of it, but he's a lineman.
Yeah.
We senior year, my academic senior year, my junior year in college, I was going to come back and play fifth year. And there was a big fight after our senior season. There's a big fight. I'm in the dorm room. I have a cast on. I have like pins in my wrist because I had just had reconstructive surgery. And I get a call from my buddy. He's like, yo, we got to go to this house. I get picked up, go to the house, big fight. People get kicked out. I'm one of them. During this time, with every like surgery, you need to be provided an analgesic, a pain medication, right? Something to subdue the pain. So for me, it was opioids. They gave me opioids. They sent me, I think it was like 180. Then I had another reconstructive surgery.
180 what? In quantity?
In quantity.
180 pills.
Yeah.
Wow. Good.
Yeah. To a college kid.
Right. Yeah.
Probably not the right move, right? So was taking them as prescribed, then started taking a little bit more because wasn't doing the trick. I was in pain. I had another surgery, got another prescription, and one thing led to another. I was going through all these like different trials. We would have to go to campus and they would interrogate us and ask questions. And I'm like, I'm all fucked up in the game. Long story short, I ended up getting kicked out. Shortly after that, I had a bone infection, osteomyelitis. So I had a PICC line going to my heart. At that point, I was fully dependent on opioids and was abusing them. You know, I'm like 205 now. I was like 175 at the time, right? My football weight was like 200, 205. So I was malnourished. I was really fucked up. And I remember I'm sitting in the room because I lived off campus, and I was banned from going on campus. I couldn't go on campus. I haven't told my parents yet. I haven't told anybody from home yet. And I was sitting in my room, and I was like, I started hysterically crying, you know, as I inject my antibiotics and take my perk. And I called my buddy Robert Gerioin, who he got kicked out with me, who he ended up playing with the Indianapolis Colts. And I was like, dude, I'm having really dark thoughts right now. Like really dark thoughts, like suicidal thoughts, but like I would never act on it, right? But I was looking for comfort. I was looking for somebody to tell me it was gonna be okay. And he was there. He hugged me. He's like, dude, everything's gonna be okay. Ended up getting, you know, leaving college, told my parents, huge disappointment. My dad was so proud to see his son be captain of a football team, two-time captain, right? So proud. So it really destroyed kind of like, not necessarily destroy our relationship, but it's like, you got to prove yourself now. Like you got to respond from this. And I know for myself, my last name is what kept me going. Like the legacy, my last name, I'm very proud of. I'm very proud of the adversity he faced, because his adversity is nothing in comparison to what I was going through. Not even close. And I'm like, stop being a fucking pussy, dude. Like, man up, make the right decisions, and start advancing your life in a positive direction. So I did that. Went back to Southern Connecticut State University, finished my 15 credits, transferred over, and got my degree.
Wow. It's a great story, man. So that would be, would you identify that addiction as acute addiction at that time? Like, so you were already mentally tough because of the environment of sports, right? Yeah. And we always talk about that. Yeah. I think as athletes growing up at any level, it teaches us the most incredible life lessons.
Right.
Were you able to just mentally switch that on? Because that dependency for some people, you know, addiction is a disease. My mom was addicted for, you know, the first 28 years of my life. And she's going on 5 years sober. I always shout her out. So shout out again, Mom.
Shout out to your mother. That's awesome.
Right. But you know, that's not an easy thing. So do you think you were able to just utilize the inspiration from your father's journey, the legacy of your last name, to just mentally turn it off and say, hey, you know what? I'm not doing this. Or were you like, are you a man of faith? Are you guided by
something? Yeah, I'm faithful. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily like I go to church every Sunday, but I believe in a higher power. You know, that I think the biggest driving force is like my last name. You know, again, really passionate about it. And like sports helped me out, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you deal with adversity in sports, right? You deal with problems, you got to find solutions. You train every day. You go through that delayed gratification because you have to, you know, look in the playbook. You have to run, you have to sprint, you have to do agilities. All those things, you know, built me to the man I am. But for me, it was like, who the fuck am I, dude? Like my dad went through 10 times worse of things in his life.
Tell me about him. So give me a little bit of background of that.
So he immigrated from Cuba. So when he lived in the mountain, San Germán, right? And San Germán is about 90 miles south of Havana, around there. And extreme poverty. Like, there's poverty in the United States. This is extreme poverty. And I'll give you a point. Cement floors, dirt roads, his dinner. And so like my wife wrote my wife, best Christmas gift you can ever give a parent, by the way, or a kid. She's like, we should get this book for your dad. And the book was questions that myself and my two sisters can ask him about his life in Cuba, because sometimes it's uncomfortable for him. Right. So we did it, and he's able to answer these questions. So I got so much information from that. And one thing that he mentioned in one of the chapters is, his dinner. Like, what was it like for like having dinner? He would come home from school and he would go behind the house to his dad with a pig tied up, you know, on some like stilts, and he would slit the pig's throat, let the blood drain, cut the meat up, and that was dinner. So like that, yeah. I can go to Stop and Shop, bro.
Right.
Like life isn't that hard. So seeing that and seeing his stories, and that's kind of like my purpose, right? My purpose in life. And like, I bought this mentorship program, and one big thing I took out of it was like, what's your why? Like, what's your purpose? So my why is, my father went from cement floors, dinner was cattle that they had in the backyard, coming to America, we were lower income, middle class, lower middle class. But my father changed the trajectory of his family tree forever. For the rest of his life, his family will never grow up in extreme poverty.
Right.
So it's my duty and obligation to, in correlation with my last name, my father's story, to change the trajectory of my family tree forever. Mm. And that's like my purpose, my why.
Well, so I have a question here. Is Dad a big guy? Because eating a lot of bacon like that, I mean, you would think.
He got a belly, but that's from the beer, brother. That's from the beer.
No, but it's crazy you say that because, you know, and I know CV could obviously relate to this as well. His family's from Tenerife. Is that right? Chile. But Chile and...
You were born in
Tenerife. But even for me, when I talk to... Not my father, he grew up here, but, you know, my grandparents, may they rest in peace. Same type of thing with the chickens and having to snap the neck and throw them and eat them. Yep. I'm like, that kind of ruins the chicken for me. I love steak, but I'm really not trying to slaughter,
whole
that's
cow. Definitely extra. I mean, I've never had to do it, but my parents did. They had the whole like chicken cutting the neck.
Yeah, I mean, your father's basically the original liver king. Like, you see that dude on Instagram now. Like,
all you got to do is put a camera in front of him and forget about it.
Right? That's an incredible story, man. Thank you for sharing it. And it's great to see the clarity and the inspiration that has derived from that, and I'm sure he's very proud. But I can also relate to you know, and just as a parent now, I'm sure you understand this. You know, you're so proud of your children, and then when they make that bad decision, you're like, oh, like you're gutted by that. But it seems like you've really been able to bounce back. Let's stay on the losses for a minute. We were talking, and you said your first year in business, you took a $30,000 L.
Mm-hmm.
How and why? And is this in the business that you're in now? This is New Era, or this was...
No, so I took an L on that, too.
Oh, all right.
We can talk about both.
So, well, I promise we're going to go W's after this. I just want to hear the L first.
So with every business, there's operating expenses. Operating expenses are going to allow you to function as a business, right? Whether it be CRM management, website development, whether it be delegating duties to VAs overseas for sourcing or for data entry or for marketing. But these are all necessary things in order to grow a business. Mm-hmm. So we had a pretty hefty budget year one. I think we could have cut down, but, we didn't bill anyone, right? We had no invoices out. We didn't have any successful placements. We didn't work with any doctors and in healthcare systems. And it was like, man, do we quit? Like 30 G's, that's a lot of money.
That's a lot.
Kept going, and then boom, one thing started compounding. Small win, and then we just started
like what
billing.
What's a small win in that situation?
We get a new partner.
Okay.
We get a new client, and like a client is a prospect. Like we have an agreement signed that they're willing to work with us, and at that point, okay, that's a good start, but that's like 10% of the battle,
right?
But those are small wins that like keep us going. And from there, year two, we started billing and we're getting these $75,000 checks. And we're like, damn, let's go. Like, let's keep it going. So that definitely helps you keep going. My other business, I had the first flip I did.
This is now house flipping you're talking about now, right?
Home flipping. Yep. The first flip I did, I had a contractor walk out with $37,000, right? They demoed. That's $3,000 to $4,000 worth of work. So really, they probably walked out with $32,000 to $33,000.
What? How?
It was lack of communication. It was they talk a big game but don't walk the walk.
So you had to, and I'm trying to understand this for myself. You gave them the money up front?
50%.
So you gave them 50% up front of the total job that they were supposed to do.
Correct.
But it was only supposed to be $3,000 or $4,000 of work, and they walked away with 37.
It was supposed to be 37. It's $74,000 worth of work.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah.
Total.
So we pay 50 up front.
Ooh.
This is our goodwill and hoping that you're going to fulfill on your duties and obligations. Yeah. 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 Mind you, that's a 6 month hold time. In 6 months, he walked out with 37. So in 6 months, our projects are done in 2 or 3 months now, usually 2 months. 6 months, we're paying interest. This happened to be $5,000 in interest. So 6 times 5, I mean, that's 30 grand right there,
right?
Plus another $37,000. So it was troublesome. And it's my own cash at that time, right? I invested about 150K into the real estate investment firm to get it up and running, because we don't want to borrow money if we don't know what the fuck we're talking about.
Yeah, of course.
Right? So we did that. We ended up profiting like 10 or 15 from it because the real estate market just kept appreciating, right? Which was, thankfully. And the GC that took over there actually is now our just favorite GC. He just does all of our projects. He's great communication. He does excellent work. And, you know, we got a really good relationship that's synergistic and helps each other kind of achieve their long-term vision.
What was the lesson learned after taking that $30,000?
Don't put out 30 Gs.
Yeah, don't put out 30 Gs. No, typically, like with contractors, they'll ask for 50% up. What we do is we pay 33% up, but we pay on a credit card. Because if you walk out, I'm calling my bank up and I'm canceling that shit, right? Because you didn't fulfill on your duties. Everything's in contract. Like, there's legal documentation. Yep. If I work with a new contractor, I'm walking three of his properties. I'm calling three references and I'm starting slow. Wow. Rather than doing an entire project, I'm doing a kitchen or a bathroom or just paint and see how the work is. Mm-hmm. And if they can do it in a timely manner and do a quality work, good with it.
You know what's crazy about that? That there's a lesson in that in itself, though, just for the everyday person who uses their debit card every day. It's the same type of thing, right? If you're using your debit card, it's actually a poor move. The best thing to do is utilize your credit card because of fraud and all the fraud that's out there, right? It's not your money. So that line of credit that's given to you by the bank, they're going to fulfill their money back much quicker than they're going to go fill yours. You're going to have to fill out all these forms for yours. It's going to be 2-3 weeks. Do you know when I made that switch, right? I have JetBlue credit card that I use everything. $50,000 in a year sounds like a lot of spending. It sounds like a lot, but it's really not.
Yeah.
So I was able to like get Mosaic membership and I don't even touch my I think I forgot my PIN, to be honest with you, because I only use my credit card. And then at the end of the month, and let me be clear, you should pay your balance.
Absolutely.
Right.
All of it.
100% of it.
Yeah.
Because that's where people get into trouble with the credit lines. Mm-hmm. But that's a great just little hack that people can switch when it comes to finance in general. You leverage, you know, somebody else's money on a credit line. You're gaining the points because it's you utilizing the credit, and rinse and repeat. And then your credit's just going to continue to grow. So then when you want to buy something, you know, and you need that bigger purchase, that line of credit is going to be available to you. Am I talking?
100% accurate. In fact, there's credit cards, there's services out there that will allow you to. So like the first property I did, I wasn't making all that much money, right? Healthcare company started picking up. Now, you know, we have money to spend. So what I did was I used the service, and this was just like, you know, and one thing that I learned in business is you're going to say no to a lot of people that you do know, and you're going to say yes to a people that you've never even spoke with in your life.
Why?
Because the people in your past might not they might not be advancing your future, right? You want to play softball, you want to go out and drink, you want to go watch a football game, you want to do this. I said no so many times to a lot of my friends in strategically, like with intent, right? I said yes to a lot of people that hit me up on LinkedIn, Facebook messaged me about like VA services or cold calling services. And like 99% of them was bullshit, but that 1% allowed me to use a service that accumulated 5 credit cards together, interest free for a year, and I bought my first property with a line of credit, no money out of pocket, and all I got to do is pay, you know, $400 or $500 a month. Game changer. Line of credit is huge.
That's gold. You know, I did a whole episode actually on home equity line of credit, HELOCs, right? So I was talking to you off air about that as well. But you mentioned a word and you said intent, right? Now, you really resonated with me. I saw a post of yours and it was basically discipline without intent. Can you talk about that a little bit and what that means?
Yeah. So discipline without intent is... And I give this example in that post, and I'll use it again because it hits home, right? So if somebody's overweight, right, and they develop a plan, their plan of action is to go to the gym every morning at 5 a.m., 5 days a week for the next 5 weeks, and they want to lose weight. Cool. And they're disciplined with that, right? They go every morning at 5 a.m., and they're doing calf raises. And after 5 weeks, they look back, reflect, and they're like, damn. Nothing happened. Nothing changed. It's because you weren't intentional with that discipline, right?
Right.
You need to, if you're disciplined with your actions, that's great. That's like half the battle, but you need to be intentional with it, right? Because discipline without intent will really yield you maybe minimal results in the end.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And to that same point, that goes to the conversation of just show up. I hate that. You know, because it's like, yeah, show up and you might, you know, establish a relationship or two, But if there's no intention behind showing up and you're not actually putting the work in, it's not 90% of the battle.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even 50% in the grand scheme of things. Yeah. It's not even close because, again, gym's a perfect example. And some people do go to the gym just to be social. I see older people. And for them, showing up is a lot because they go, they're having coffee in the lobby. Right. They're having a great time. But that's their intent, I believe.
For sure.
You know, but if you are overweight or something like that, or you're trying to accomplish any goal in life, there needs to be a specific intent followed by that discipline of showing up. Yeah. But I like that when you said that. I want to, I guess, touch on even for me, I love learning about people, right? With podcasts, you know, just today, you hear stories and it resonates so much with me. Anybody that I've seen in any industry that has acquired some level of success, and whether that's, you know, a beautiful family, whether that's monetary, whatever it is, what are the habits? What do the habits look like for real estate Ramos? I'm curious on a day to day.
So I read a book called Power of One More, Ed Mylett.
Ed Mylett.
Yeah.
I know
that.
I know Ed.
So I always try to take bits and pieces from books that will advance my career, will self-develop me into the next. Because if you try to take 20 things and try to implement 20 things, you're going to fucking lose your mind, right? So for me, it's one thing, right? One more, Power of One More. So Ed Mylett's Power of One More is time blocking. So for me, I time block my entire day and it's set. No one can call me, no one can text me, no one can do anything to interrupt this point of day because this is my goal and this is my intention, right? So for me, I usually wake up at 4 a.m. This is around 3 to 4 days a week. I'll wake up at 4, I'll get to the gym at 4:30, 4:45. After that, I will usually either podcast, read, get ready for work. My son wakes up at 7. I watch my son from 7 till 8, play around with him, stand up, do push-ups in front of him. Every morning I do push-ups in front of my son, and now he's like slowly working his way up to do that because the way kids learn is through mimicking, right? Then I get right to business. So like my healthcare company, I reduced my hours because we're selling, but I've delegated my duties elsewhere. So like my data entry, my administration, my marketing, my sourcing and cold calling is all overseas, India, Nigeria, Philippines. So Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday morning, that's that. My Monday and Friday is my investment firm. And then Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday afternoon is all like networking. All I do is network. How am I going to bridge the gap from where I am today to where I want to be tomorrow? And I think the way that I'm going to do that and the way that anyone's going to do that is through a relationship, through shaking hands, because the more hands you shake, the more money you make.
Well said. Talk to me a little bit about house flipping now, right? I've exposed myself on this podcast here and there. Claudio is a very handy man.
Yeah.
Right. So when I hear flip, I get a little nervous because I'm like, listen, I think I could find the financial leverage to get in the game, but I don't have the skills necessary to even change light bulbs out here. You know, like I'm a liability. You know, if I'm I even demo some stuff I've demoed in the past, and like, you know, I'm pulling my shoulder out, like things are going on here.
Right.
You know, so are you handy? And then how did you step into that game if you're not handy?
Yeah, I'm not handy at all. My wife wants me to change a light bulb. I'm like, let me call my GC Carlos up to change this light bulb. You know what I mean? No, I'm not handy at all. My strengths are I act as almost like a faucet, right? So you turn on a faucet, the water spreads everywhere. But what happens to the faucet? It goes all to one place, right? So I'm just bringing these pieces together. Delegating your weaknesses for somebody else's strengths is very powerful in any business. And that's, you know, one of the biggest things that I learned throughout my time in business. Finding a loyal contractor, a reliable contractor, one that communicates, one that's not going to come back and say, well, this is an extra 5,000, this is 7,000, like setting expectations up front.
Of the GC.
Question.
Do you have that GC then find the electricians and then find everybody, or do you actually do that?
Great question. So starting off, it was his guys.
Gotcha.
Right. But then we noticed painting's 15 grand for 1,700 square foot home.
Exterior or interior?
Interior.
My God.
I know. That's some bullshit. So, like,
my daughter paints.
Yeah. Right? I'll give her 10 G's. Shitting me. So we're like, all right, how can we decrease costs? Because the more we decrease costs from our GC side, the more aggressive we can get with offers and the more we can acquire. That's one of the hardest things to do right now. Like, we were talking about how hard it is to buy a home because everything's inflated and there's no inventory outside, right? So we start calling and networking with painters and getting price per square foot and going to walk their work and then introduce them to our GC. And now we have another painter part of the GC's team. Mm-hmm. What that does for us is now we can acquire more. What that does for our GC is now he can paint more. He can go elsewhere. He can hire them elsewhere in other jobs and make more money. So we're advancing his overall goal in business while advancing our business. So it's a great win-win scenario for all parties. And for us, you know, it's a little bit of extra work went a long way.
Mm. I'm consuming all that.
I love it.
I'm taking it all in. You see me thinking.
We're going to get you in the game, brother. We're going to get you in the game.
All right. So now, you know, our listeners span from basically, you know, 23, 24 to about 70 years old. That's like our yeah. You know, bigger scope.
Yeah.
The sweet spot right now, though, is between 25 and 44. Like, okay. Statistically, that's who we're really servicing, right? So I can see individuals that have zero in their bank account, individuals who have maybe 25 to 50,000 available, and then those who have six figures available,
mm-hmm.
right? Give me three scenarios of how each one of those individuals can get into something like this. And would you recommend it? Because you might say, no, if you have no money, don't do it. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm curious. So
that's a really good question. Each scenario calls for a different answer. So if you have $0 in your account, I would suggest stacking as much bread as you possibly can. Or developing a team or partnering up with somebody in your industry, in your area, that if you bring them a deal and you can bring some money to the table via line of credit through a credit card. Mm-hmm. And like, if your viewers want to hit me up on the service that I use, like, as long as they have good credit and they have $0 in the bank, they can still get a line of credit, right? Try to partner up with somebody, bring a deal to the table. If you have like 25-50,000 saved up that you want to use or you want to leverage, you can partner with guys like me. You can go out on your own. The issue with going out on your own, this takes time, man. This isn't like something that we submit 25 offers a week. Wow. 25 mm-hmm. offers a week that requires our GC walking through it, that requires us underwriting, that requires us doing market analytics.
Strictly flip. Right. So you're looking for like beaters.
Even beat up properties, bro. Motivated sellers, because if I submit 25 and somebody's looking for a quick close, but I don't need to paint, I don't need to do the flooring, maybe a bathroom and kitchen there, I'll take it all day as long as the numbers work out.
Yep. So 25 to 50,000, you're saying contact somebody like yourself and that person can get in the game with you.
Correct.
Now, what does a typical return look like on that?
So we do 20% annualized rate of return, 10% minimum, meaning that usually our flip cycle is 4 to 6 months. So in 6 months, you're going to get 10%. If it's 7 months, it's 1.77% or 1.67% every month that we don't return the money. We don't return the principal and interest, meaning that the longer we hold, the more we get penalized, right? Mm-hmm. Which is good. If we flip it in 1 month, you get 10%. You invest $25,000, you get $2,500 back. And the reason we're doing this, and like, I love talking about the returns, but like, it's the mindset, right? Mm-hmm. So if you look at CalPERS is California Public Education Fund, right? This is a pension plan. It's the largest pension plan in the United States of America. It's for all public employees in the state of California.
I was going to say residents of California.
Okay. Yep. So what happens in a 401k? You work, you invest an X percent into the 401k, they match an X percent into the mm-hmm. 401k. CalPERS pension plan is a diversified portfolio. 15% is private equity real estate. So they're taking the money that their employees invest into the pension plan and they're leveraging that money mm-hmm. to then invest in private equity real estate. And I think to myself, well, that's bullshit. Why don't these people just do it? Well, because there's not vehicles. The banks don't want to educate these people because then they're not giving the banks money. They're giving investors, operators, syndicators money to invest and make a greater return. Because at the end of the day, you're going to make 0.01% with money saved up in the bank, or you can go into the capital market, which is crazy volatile. But, you know, there's two reasons people want to invest in real estate: capital creation, capital preservation. Capital preservation is that volatile market, right? Mm-hmm. Stocks are all over the place, inflation, you don't know what to do. You want to park it in an alternative investment vehicle that's tried true. You can touch it, see it, and feel it. Or capital creation is like, you want to go on a vacation. You want to achieve financial independence. And the only way that you're going to do that is risking a little bit.
Yeah, for sure.
But partnering with the right people.
Right.
You know?
My HELOC brain is going crazy right now.
I know.
I'm serious.
Well, think about this, right? Think about this. You go to the bank, right? You work, you get paid really good money. You work a really good job. You go to the bank. You say, hey, I want to buy this property. They say, okay, give me your W-2s. Give me all you got. Yep. Boom, boom. No problem. We're going to lend on this. We will absolutely lend this. But if you don't pay us, we get the collateral. We get the asset. We get the real estate, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're paying them principal and interest every month. The banks believe in cash flow. The interest every month is the bank's cash flow. That's the return on investment. Every single month they're getting that, right? And it's backed by real estate.
Right.
So like for us as an investment firm, like, we're just mimicking the blueprint that banks have in place, except giving a greater return, right? So the banks are doing this. That leads me to believe that we should be doing it too. In the everyday person, we're just trying to give power back to the people, back to the working middle class. Even if it's somebody that's a accredited investor, it could be an accredited investor, it could be somebody that's not accredited. It doesn't matter. Like, we're still trying to give power back to the people, and that's kind of the way our firm's set up and the mindset behind our firm.
Right.
Not to necessarily challenge or not to necessarily change the way people think, but simply challenge the way people think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that statement is big. Power back to the people. You talk a lot about, like, you know, your mission and trying to leverage other people's money, but also for them, right? And you truly believe this from the bottom of your heart, right? Yep. Like, so you're saying right now, if somebody gives you $25,000, you're guaranteeing a 10% return on their money, whereas anywhere else, that's not really doable.
Capital markets, you're yielding a 10%, you're yielding over 30 years, 8 to 9% year over year, right? Capital markets, in, you know, stocks, 401ks, that's the average, right? We're saying 10% in 4 to 6 months, 20% annualized. I mean, you're not going to find that.
Right.
You'll find it in private equity syndication, or you'll find it in what we're doing, which is a kind of a hybrid model of syndication.
Damn.
It's crazy.
No, it's for real. No, that really is, because, you know, you always hear everyone's business. It's for the people. I get it. But this business actually is for you and the people. Like, 100%. you're benefiting on both sides. So, all right, you have this goal of, you know, the road to 10,000 doors or 10,000 units, right? Grant Cardone calls them doors. You're talking units, same thing. Yeah. Basically acquiring 10,000 properties.
Yeah.
So you're at now 16.
Yep. Yeah.
How do you scale this thing, and how does this become a real goal versus just an astronomical number? That sounds a little crazy. I like crazy though.
And what is the timeline?
Tomorrow.
Great question. Yeah.
Well, after this podcast drops, my man is going to have a funding sources out the wazoo.
So I'm happy you brought that up, because there's a, I think it's in Think and Grow Rich. I think I read it there. Success should not be measured by the proximity of the destination, but from the point of origin. So for me,
wait, slow that down.
Yeah,
say it again.
Yeah. Success should not be measured by the proximity of the destination, but from the point of origin. Right.
Gotcha.
So last year I did two properties. This year, 14. The point of origin from where I am now. Holy shit. Like, I'm very, very happy. Not content though.
Because
I want more. I want that 10,000. So to answer that question, how soon? Next year, but it's going to take longer. I know it's going to take longer. I just got a property in Ohio under contract.
Was that your phone that was blowing up like AOL Instant Messenger upstairs, man?
It's nonstop.
ding, 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 ding.
It's nonstop. My mind's my mind just going 20 different directions.
Yeah.
But again, like, I don't answer that because intention.
Right. Of course.
You know what I mean?
Course,
delegation
of,
you know, time.
Yep. And how do you, I guess, not get overwhelmed by that? Because, you know, the reality of this statement here is, yeah, it sounds astronomical, but you're 33, which is young, but not that young. I'm the same age.
Yeah.
But in the past 2 years, you've acquired 16 properties. And in 1 year, you've acquired 14. So there's no issue, obviously, acquiring 30 next year. So this number now compounded over time. I mean,
double it every year. That's cool. Double it. Next thing you know, compounding interest. Yep. You know, what do we know? You invest $100 today and it continues to do it.
Right.
You're going to be a millionaire, you know.
And now, do you utilize equity in these properties to buy the next one on top of the funding sources that come your way?
It depends on the deal. So like, our first obligation and duty is to pay back our investors. And if we can do so and hold the property and do a cash out refinance, the problem with cash out refinancing now, or even just like refinancing, is interest rates, right? 7%. But if you do a DSCR, interest rate's a little bit higher because it's an investment property, right? So your debt service is going to be, it's going to be low unless you get the right deal.
Right.
You get the right deal, then it makes sense. For us, we're just flipping, we're stacking capital because eventually you want to get to the apartment space. And we can, like, we have the right relationships in place in order to do so. It's just we want to be hyper focused on what we know works and what we've shown to work.
Right.
Right. So, yeah.
Biggest risk factor for your line of work. What's the biggest mistake that could possibly happen here? You know, because we're talking all about, like, you know, there's really no risk. The risk, yes. If I give you $25,000 tomorrow, there's risk in me. Like, you know, you running away with the money, you doing whatever it is. But what's the biggest, I guess, risk factor for you guys? Is it the market? Is it like, what is it?
It's the market, but it's backed by real estate. Mm-hmm. So we can cash out. We can refinance. And when we do refinance, we might be at a... So there's lenders out there they'll fund on a 0.9, one point DSCR loan, right? Mm-hmm. Meaning we're not going to cash flow, but at least we get the investors their money back and they're happy.
Yeah.
Right? It's protected by an asset. The risk is the market crashes. We can then refinance.
Which it will at some point.
Of course.
This is history.
It definitely will. I don't know if within the next 5 years that's what's going to happen, but you know, it definitely can. The house burns down. But I think the biggest risk is waiting.
Right.
That's the biggest risk. We were talking about that earlier, right? Yep. It's never the right time to buy real estate. It's never the right time to have a kid. Mm-hmm. But like once you do, it's like the greatest thing that's ever happened to you, right? Now I sound like a salesman. But like when I had my kid, it's like, shit, man, my wife's pregnant. I mean, plan for this. I don't know if I'm ready for it.
Yeah.
And then Chase Matthew Ramos is born. And I'm like, oh my God, the overconsumption of love I have for you. Now I need to be better. Right.
Yeah.
That motivates you to be better. Mm-hmm. You get your first property. Like, how can I do two more? How can I do three more? I have this guy, my buddy Yusuf. He invested 2 months ago, and we had a property in Stratford he invested on. He invested $25,000. And in 23 days, we got his money back. Right. And that doesn't happen often.
But you gave him the full 25 plus his 10%.
Yeah.
In 10 days? I mean, how many days? 23 days.
No. Right, right. So that's 120, a little over 120% annualized rate of return. Right. It's ridiculous, right?
It's unheard of.
So I'm like, hey, Yusuf, congratulations. You know, here's your principal and interest. We can do one of two things. We can give you your principal and interest back, or you can keep your principal and we can get your interest back. He's like, Matt, give me my interest, keep the principal to keep going. But now the kid's going to pay, he's going to pay for a vacation with his family.
Right.
Right. Just from that. And he's happy. He's thrilled, you know, because he wants more.
Right.
And that's humans. Humans in nature. Yeah, they always want more. You know, it's in us. It's in the DNA.
Mm. Favorite part of transition a little bit.
Yeah.
Because what I do.
I love it.
Favorite part of being a dad. You said Chase?
Chase.
Chase is now 9 months?
9 months.
Okay. Favorite part.
Where to start, bro? Where to start? I love these questions.
Yeah.
Seeing him become a human,
right? All right, right? Let's be honest.
First 2 or 3 months, it's like, like you're crying, shitting, and pooping. Like you're not laughing or anything,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
No, but seeing him overcome adversity too, and I'll give you a perfect example. So, this is like last week. He's trying to stand up now. He's crawling all over the place now. Mm-hmm. He's trying to stand up, and like he can't yet. He's getting there. So I'm sitting down with my wife and Chase is like looking up at me with his arms up, right? Like, help me stand up. He keeps trying to stand up. And my wife's like, oh, he's looking at you to help him stand up. And I'm like, hold on. Like, give it a second. So he's grabbing at the couch to try to stand up, and he's like trying to lift his legs up, and he can't do it, and he falls down, and he keeps trying to do it, and he falls down. He's getting frustrated. And Tiff is like, my wife is like, Matt, pick him up. Like, you know, yeah, melts your heart to see that, mm-hmm, right? And I'm like, no, like, give it a second. So like after third or fourth time, like I nudge him, his butt a little bit, and he stands up. The smile on his face.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Like, I did this.
Yeah. But like, that's so fulfilling, man. Yeah. That's so fulfilling. And that fulfillment wouldn't have happened if he didn't struggle to get there.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's, I love that. I love that.
Tiff, you said.
Tiff.
What is, how does Tiff make you a better man?
So like when I
everything, yo, yeah, she owns me, she doesn't,
yo, no, dead ass though.
Yeah,
she,
yeah, no, I get it. Yeah,
it's I'm getting chills. Mm. I'm getting chills. Like, so when I started my business, I went to her and I said, listen, Tiff, this is the deal. I have negative $298 in my account.
I would have been out. I would have left.
Bro,
peace, bro.
100%, right? Are you crazy? Yeah. I was like, this is what I'm going to do. I'm quitting my job and starting a business. She's like, all right, do it.
Ramen noodles it is.
Let's go.
Ramos to ramen noodles.
Dead ass. So like starting the business, I was working out of the garage. In summers, it was hot. And in the winter, it was freezing. Dialing for dollars nonstop, 24/7. I sacrificed. And this is what people don't understand about entrepreneurship and their significant others. The amount that they have to sacrifice,
yeah,
because now I'm not doing chores. Now I'm not cooking food. Now I'm not picking up groceries. I'm dedicated and obligated to the business. So who does that fall on? Mm-hmm. It falls on my wife. It falls on that person's significant other. She's picked up everything. She locked down. She had a mortgage. She locked it down. Usually, you know, I'd split it with her because, yeah, I have a multifamily. I'm collecting on that. So I'd split it with her. She's like, don't worry. I got it. I know your circumstance. You'll get there. You'll, mm-hmm, get there. Believing in me.
Right.
The proximity is power, Dave, right? The biggest impact somebody can have on your life is the person that you lie your head next to every single night.
Mm.
Because if you're with the wrong person that doesn't advance your purpose, your why, your future, you're not going to make it. And Tiff has held me down.
How long you guys been married now? How long you guys been together? 2 years?
So 3 years we've been together. Yeah. Cool. After 1 year, I'm like, oh shit. This is the one.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? So 2 years we've been married. My family loves her. You know, she comes from Bridgeport, not the nicest area in Bridgeport. Mm-hmm. She's had a long, long past, and she's dealt with trials and tribulations, mm, that not many people can amount to, and yeah, who she's become. She's a nurse practitioner. She's former Miss Connecticut. She's top six Miss USA. I don't want to get it wrong. She'll be bashing me on this shit. But, she's beautiful. She's intelligent. She's ambitious. She pushes me to always become better, because if I don't, she's kicking me to the curb because she can get better. But that's the dichotomy of relationships in men and women. Like, yeah, I'm pursuing my own inner excellence, and she also is pursuing her own inner excellence, and she's getting better. I'm getting better. And that keeps the relationship strong, because I can walk out and find somebody else, and she can walk out and find, yep, somebody else. That's what makes us really,
you guys,
strong
gotta
together.
Be there together.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I am going to say, I may have given this man the best alley-oop of his entire, yeah, life. No, God bless you guys. That's beautiful.
We wanted to take a quick second to let you guys know that we partnered with our good friends over at Orgain.com. We're happy to offer our listeners 30% off by entering the code NOSNOOZE30. Again, that's NOSNOOZE30 for 30% off your first order. If you're on the market for a new protein powder, nutritional shake, protein bar, or Mike's favorite, collagen peptides, Orgain is your one-stop shop. As all of you know, my Crohn's disease is currently in remission, and the only protein I use is from Orgain. My personal favorites are the chocolate peanut butter and the vanilla bean. With the code, you can try a 2-pound tub for under $20. Talk about not snoozing. Go get yours today. Now, back to the epi.
You are big on analytics, man. You were talking about your iPhone analytics. This is something I've never seen.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Talk to me about it. Why you do it, and I guess what the, Yeah, what the purpose is of it.
Yeah, so it's my phone system. It's a phone system called Kixie, and basically it's just measuring analytics, like how many calls, how many touch points I have to make to get in touch with somebody, how many people I get in touch with to convert to a transaction to mm-hmm. compensation. So it's
and
like,
let me be specific here. Yeah. So this says, this is a million. Yeah. Basically 1.6 million seconds, approximately 26,000 minutes, 432 hours, and approximately 9,000 text messages, 10,500 cold calls, and 2,000 connections.
Yep. 2 years.
And you track that.
Absolutely. That doesn't count. So, like, that doesn't count phone calls on my phone, because, like, at night when I'm having dinner, I might have to step out, go upstairs, or like I'm watching Chase, I might have to go mm-hmm. on my phone and make a phone call to a doc or to an investor. But yeah, so analytics are great. And that's like, I sent that with intention to show that like this didn't happen overnight.
Right.
You know what I mean? It took grind, struggle, sacrifice, and effort. You know, one thing that we all have control in this world of is our effort, right? If you put effort out, you put massive action out, you're going to get a return, mm-hmm. right? You just have to be willing to work for it.
Right.
You got to be willing to take the punches, you know? It's like Mike Tyson says, everybody has a plan until they get punched in the face.
That's right.
That's it, bro.
Data's huge. I'm huge on data in every aspect of life.
Yeah.
You know, even if it is in the gym,
right?
You need to be tracking this stuff.
Yep.
You know, in business, you need to be tracking it. I talk to my team all the time and the importance of, you know, us bringing in numbers. That's
right.
Cool, but we need to track this data to then propose it to somebody to then receive more money, you know what I mean, for funding purposes. But without it, you know, when you're not on the level of the presentation to, like, you know, say it's a local town board or it's state level or federal where you're trying to receive funding, nobody's just going to be like, yo man, here's some money. I will say this, and this is a very short conversation we've had, I am going to not only acknowledge all this work that you put in, I feel extremely comfortable personally getting involved in business with you.
I appreciate that, man.
I do not say that about many people, you know, because there's a reason why I have, you know, my vision is my vision, right? Why would anybody else believe in it? But I've been able to leverage some things, and I'm, you know, waiting for the right partners and things like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, I'm a believer in you. I like this.
I love it. No, I appreciate that. Good. It's all about breadcrumbs in life, right? Shawnee Deggs.
What do you mean by that?
Breadcrumbs. So like, I'm
Italian. Talk to me.
I love it. I love it. Yeah, breadcrumbs. Dave, you love breadcrumbs.
Literally. What are we saying here? We're talking.
No wonder why you love the gym. You got to work off the breadcrumbs.
You know. Talk
to
me.
Yeah, yeah. So breadcrumbs in life are like, I call it the matrix. Some people call it the universe. Some people call it faith, God. Some people call it the reticular activating system, which is, you know, in your brain. It's something that's real. It's a physical anatomical structure, right? Breadcrumbs are when things come in front of you, or when something happens to you, or when you get a text message, or when you get a phone call, or when you see a property and you were looking at the property next door and this one's now for sale. Those are breadcrumbs. You got to pick up the breadcrumbs as they come across you, but you have to be very self-aware and conscious of those breadcrumbs, because some people just let them pass by and they're like, no way, that's too good to be true. It's not, though. It's not. This is something, like, we're made up of protons and neutrons, bro. Protons are positive, neutrons are negative, right? Whichever one you feed, you're going to be the one or the other. I choose to feed protons, and I take breadcrumbs as energy, right? You just, like, take a piece of it. I probably sound fucking crazy to half your audience, but, like,
no, they're used to the big science. I talk about science, you're talking about protons and neutrons. I've talked the reticular activating system.
Yep.
I've talked about this stuff, but I love this. Keep going.
Yeah. So, again, moral of the story is, like, the breadcrumbs that come across, you're going to see them. If you start thinking about things, it's your reticular activating system, right? Mm-hmm. You start thinking about things, or you want to get an X6, you're going to see more of it.
Yes.
Right. It's going to come across your face more and more and more and more. If you see a house, if you make a relationship, if you get a text, if you get a group text about somebody that wanted to invite you into a podcast, and it's your best boy that I should probably come and get on this podcast and meet and you know, further the relationship, because we met once before, right? But those are breadcrumbs. You just got to pick them up and find them. And if you pick up enough, what's at the end of the rainbow? A pot of gold.
Is there really?
Lucky Is it Lucky, Lucky Charms, baby?
You know, I can't tell Callie that because Callie will go chase the rainbow in the park. Yeah. You know, no,
cut that part out, right? Yeah, yeah.
No, that's well explained, man. I love it, and it's funny. So people, when they hear the RAS, the reticular activating system, the easiest way to explain that, it's funny. Whenever I talk to people about it, I give the car analogy. Yeah. There's a reason why when you purchase a car, you see that exact car everywhere.
Everywhere.
Literally everywhere. But it's always been there.
Yeah.
But that's that reticular piece that's,
yep.
you know, yep. now there, you're aware of it.
Yeah.
And now this is huge too, man. Like really, you know, it's almost like a calling, right? Like you have these little things in your life and those who, I feel this way for me personally, right? I have a higher power that has aligned me for a greater purpose. I'm still figuring that purpose out, but right. I'm really stepping into it. I do have this little voice in my head that basically guides me and gives me the right, you know, gives me the right advice. But then there's this other little voice that is like, yo, go left, bro. Go left. But the longer you follow that, and these could be your breadcrumbs, these could be, you know, this could be your higher power, whatever right. it is, you have to become aware of that. And that's a self-awareness, right? Talk to me a little bit about how self-aware you are, why you've become this way. And then I guess how you started kind of implementing that into your life.
Yeah. So growing up, I loved sports, right? I was a gymnast. I played basketball. I played football, baseball, soccer, you name it, dude. I did it, right? I was never like book smart, man. I was never the smartest guy in the room, right? But one thing that I always did, I would always work. Right. I would like, whether it be training, whether it be running, whether it be sprinting, whether going out playing, you know, backyard hoops or whatever it is, I'm always doing it nonstop. Right. And what I've learned over time is that, like, for me, I'm never going to be the smartest in the room. I never want to be the smartest in the room.
Yeah. It's a bad room.
Bad room to be in. Right. But one thing that I can commit to anybody around me is that I will not be outworked and I will never, ever give up. Right. You know, I think just that alone, that self-awareness alone, you know, I know my strengths. Mm-hmm. I know my strengths. And it took time. It took reflection. It took a lot of times I do inventory. I take inventory in my day, right? So I get home, what I do good, what I do bad, right? That allows me to be more self-aware, mm-hmm. right? I can improve here. I didn't wake up this morning. You're a bitch. Wake up tomorrow, right? And I wake up tomorrow because I take inventory mm-hmm. versus just coasting throughout life.
Right.
Like you keep coasting throughout life. Where are you going to be 10 years from now?
Same place.
Same fucking
place.
And it's
unbelievable though, how just as a society, we have gotten to the point now that that's become the norm. You know what I mean? It's sad. It's actually sad that that's become the norm. And again, I have no problem with people punching the clock 9 to 5. I do it. Yeah. I mean, I don't punch the physical clock, but I have a job, yeah. right? I'm an entrepreneur. Yep. We're talking about this as well.
Yeah.
You know, entrepreneurial skills are great, but real entrepreneurs are pretty rare because for you to go out on your own before working, you know, in a organization and building those skills, it makes it much harder to then go out and do something on your own. One of the biggest switches that I made, though, was, you know, having that self-awareness, but then also changing my environment and who I was kind of hanging out with. You know, I still love so many people in my life, but I've really shut down my circle mm-hmm. Just because I found myself being, and this sounds, you know, kind of arrogant, but it's the truth. You know, I found myself almost the smartest guy in too many rooms, you know, and I liked the influence and I love influence over other people,
mm-hmm.
but I was like, damn, man, I need to be a little selfish about this. You know, I need an advancement in my life. So what I started doing was I basically started hanging around commissioners. And this is no joke. These people, I mean, I'm the youngest commissioner by far. These people, you know, that I was in rooms with, they're 40, 50, 60, 70, some of them 80 years old. And I don't think it's a coincidence that within 2 years of that, I became a commissioner. Gotcha. I mean, obviously you have to ask and you have to act that way as well. But that's the biggest lesson that I've learned when it comes to self-awareness, for sure.
I mean, proximity is power, man.
Yep.
Right? You put yourself in the right room, the man in the arena.
Yeah, yep. Yeah, of course.
Yep. That's like posted in my office, the man in the arena.
Because some people don't.
The man in the arena is basically like, I wish I wanted to memorize it word for word too, but so the man in the arena is basically like, if you don't try, then you're going to regret not ever doing or trying whatever it is in life that you want to pursue, that you want to, that you've been passionate about pursuing, you're going to look back and you're going to regret it. But if you do try and you fail, at least you fail valiantly. At least you fail daring to take risk and daring to be great and daring to pursue something, a better purpose or aspirations in your life that maybe other people are, they don't dare to do it. So, you know, it's all about daring to become the best version of yourself and daring to whatever it is that you want to pursue in life. It's do it. Dare to be the person in the arena. Like, jump in, dive in head first, no safety net. And if you fail, you fail on top, right? You fail higher up, because what's the worst that's going to happen? Mm-hmm. You don't win. You don't succeed.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, I love this. We look at people that are, you know, so far above us. And I think a lot of people who listen to podcasts, you know, Ed Milet, I'm actually, congratulations, Ed. He's actually been my mentor for years. He doesn't know me personally, but I know him. I've consumed all of his content. But so I tell people now, oh, yeah, I have the number one coach in the world, because he actually is the number one life coach in the world. So that's my coach, you know.
Yeah.
But what I like about what we do here is you have 2-3 men here that, you know, by no means have accomplished everything in life. But I love the different levels, you know, because you have the Ed Milets, but you also have the Matt Real Estate Ramos is in the room. You have the Claudio the Voices Valenzuela.
Yeah.
You have Dave the Body Regina that, you know, are striving for the same things that these people are doing. So it's, my point is, it's easy to hear like an Ed Milet say, yeah, just dive all in. He's already worth $500 million, you know, whereas we're just all doing this now. And that's the piece that I love about, you know, the No Snooze podcast.
Yep.
Because by no means are we the biggest podcast in the world, but we're doing real things. You know, and like after this episode, I'm going to personally talk to you and we're going to make real moves.
Love it.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, Absolutely. And these are the things Absolutely. That we have to be doing. So when you're saying that, you know, it's resonating with me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Don't limit your challenges. Challenge your limits.
Yep.
Why does that mean something to you?
So the American dream, the perception of the American dream is save money, get a nice family, buy a single family home, work for a great company, W-2 paying job, retire at 65, right? That's the American dream. That's what we're sold on, the American dream. That's the American trap. My perspective, right?
That's
the American trap, right? It's like, it was created to trap people in being these worker slaves, these worker bees, in like,
and then at 65, you have to rely on the government because your Social Security, all of that stuff.
And Social Security is going bankrupt anyway, bro. Right. So what the fuck? Like, the government is only spending more money. So you're going to rely on the government to tell you this is the American dream. Trust me, retire at 65. My dad's 74 years old, and he's not retired. I think it's through intention. He probably could retire, but like, he's still not retired. I want to be retired at 45, but I'm never going to retire because I'm going to continue to work and continue to pursue excellence because that's the leader I need to be for my son and my family. Mm-hmm. But the American trap is I just want to challenge my limits. And like, part of challenging my limits is not falling for the American dream. It's, or the American trap, right? Making my own American dream, making the American dream to me is financial independence, financial freedom, freedom of time, freedom of maneuverability, freedom of, if I want to move to Florida, I can. Mom, don't worry. I can fly back whenever I want with Chase. We're homeschooling him. We're doing whatever we need to do in order to provide that maneuverability. So I think, you know, whenever I think like the 10,000 number, like you asked me how long it's going to take to get there.
10,000 hours.
I mean, it's well, 10,000 units, $10,000, right?
Gotcha, yeah.
I'm just challenging my limits, right? And that 10,000 number just stood out to me. I'm like, all right, 10,000 units, 10,000 hours to master something. Let's go. Right. But that's where the
exactly. Yeah. That's why I said
you knew exactly. Yep. Yeah,
100%.
Quick question: Are you the kind of person that you set that goal, right? 10,000.
Yeah.
Do you now break it down to what's achievable on a yearly, on a monthly, on a daily?
Smart goals. Are we talking smart goals?
Smart goals. I think I learned that in Springfield College. So, you know, that's one thing positive that came out of Springfield College. Shout out to Springfield College. Like reverse engineer it.
Right.
I look to double everything every year. So 14 needs to turn to 28. 28 needs to turn to, Grant Cardone says 10x everything. I don't disagree with that. Like, if it's I can hard. Do 140, it's really hard. But if I want to do, if he tells me 10x 14, I do 140, but I hit 100, well, I'm not doubling it. I'm tripling it, quadrupling it. And get 10x.
It's a great goal. It's a great goal to strive for. But the reality of 10xing something every time is hard.
Yeah.
But to your point, you falling a little short, you might have doubled, you might have tripled, you might have quadrupled.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Yeah. But that's a good point. And honestly, I'm going to take from that and go home and reverse engineer what it's going to. I'm going to be doing this all day. I'm going to hit you up and be like, yo, I spent the whole day doing this. I got to catch up on emails now. But thank you, because now I have a plan of action in place. No, but I think it's like, for me, we just got a property under contract in Ohio. So we're expanding markets. So it's exciting, man. Very exciting.
What is the biggest personal mistake that you've ever made in your life?
I don't know if I live in regrets. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, but the I guess the biggest personal mistake,
it could be anything. I'm not looking, you know, it doesn't have to be.
No, I know. I'm just trying to really come up with like something that's like, really impacted my life or impacted.
Well, I know for me, like I texted. So, and the reason why I'm thinking about this is because on the way, you know, I had this. I was listening to a little worship music, and I was getting just, you know, a little emotional. In myself, and I was missing my grandparents for whatever reason.
Yeah.
So I shot my cousins a text. I'll read it to you. Nothing long or drawn out. But I just said, you guys have been on my mind. I love you both so much and have an incredible day. I regret so much not doing that and calling when my parents would say, you know, call grandpa. You know, even my grandmother was on her deathbed. This is no joke. I had multiple opportunities to go and sit with her. And I let what I was physically seeing, because I would see her and she was kind of dwindling away.
Mm-hmm.
I said, I don't want to go back. But she still had a voice.
Yep.
And I could have sat there and I could have talked with her more. And I didn't do that. You know, so now I look back and I'm like, that was one of the biggest mistakes that I've ever made.
Yeah.
And the unfortunate thing about it is I can't go back.
I know. Yeah.
You know, and all I can do is look forward and keep pushing and, you know, now talk to my cousins and reach out and, you know, be that inspiration for my daughter and provide that level of comfort to my family. But that was something that I was thinking about today.
Yeah. I mean, that, isn't that a tough pill to swallow?
Oh, it sucks.
Yeah, man.
It really sucks.
That's a tough pill to swallow. I think for me, like, and I can like still work on this and become better at this, like, I need to be more present with my family, more present with my wife, more present with my father and mother. I'm so grateful for my family. And like my dad's still alive. My mom's still alive. Two beautiful sisters, a beautiful wife. But, you know, I work a lot. You know, I work a lot of hours and I take a lot of phone calls. Like sometimes I'm not present. So I think I need to be a lot more present. And, you know, I over the past couple of years of business, you know, I think I regret not being more present.
Mm-hmm.
Not hitting my, you know, not texting my father, like, let's go golfing. You know, last year I didn't go golf with my father once, right? This year I went a couple of times because I'm like, damn, like my dad's 75, mm-hmm. 74. He's an older guy. So that's something that I can still work on today, but I do regret not spending more time or sending that one text, right? Which takes 5 seconds.
Dude, and that's what boggled my mind, you know? And then immediately, I mean, my cousin Jake, he must have been literally on his phone because he loved it within, I mean, I didn't even know it went through, you know? But then thinking like, damn, Dave's thinking about me. And it was so genuine because I don't do it.
Right.
I don't do it, you know? And then he hit me back. He was like, wow, Dave, I love you so much. My cousin Ben just hit me right back too. And it's so little, man. It's so little. And the present thing, that really hits home too, because my daughter's now at the point, and you know, you're going to experience this. Hopefully you don't, but I think it will happen. My daughter now, when I'm on the phone, she'll tell me, get off your phone. She's 3 years old. Right. And me and her mother were talking about this too, because, you know, she mentioned it to me as well. And she said, you know, she's right. Like, our daughter's right. you shouldn't be on the phone, you know, if it's here and there. But the second you go to pick it up and that attention is taken away from her, she feels it.
Yeah.
And I don't like that feeling as the dad, you know,
because
I'm like, I take this, I toss that thing right away.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But then in the moments that I get frustrated, there's moments that I get frustrated with her. I'm like, give me a minute.
Yeah.
And those are the day to day little things that I'm like, damn, I got to get better with. And that's that present. Because the reality is my phone should be in a different room.
Right.
You know, if I'm doing an activity with her or something,
right.
You know.
Right.
It's hard.
It's got to be hard because you want to be a successful person. You want to be like you have high expectations for yourself. And part of those high expectations are answering the phone calls that you don't really want to answer.
Yep.
But like then there's the. I got to be there for my daughter and I got to live. I can live as a leader for my daughter. And part of that is like not being present. And it's a tough balance. And I can imagine because I haven't been, I'm not there yet, but I will be there.
Absolutely.
I will be there for sure. So I'll be hitting you up with some advice there. Right?
Yeah.
So 2 years down the road, you know, expect my phone call, brother.
This is another challenging question. What mistake have you made that you will not make again?
Probably the biggest mistake that I've made that I won't make again is investing in a contractor that talks a lot, talks a big game, but doesn't walk the walk. And getting all my contracts in place, getting all of my systems in place, because that's a lot of fucking money. And they just walk out with a lot of money. And that hits. And when you're not, like, you know, for me, at that point, I'm not making hundreds of thousands of dollars a year.
Right.
You know, $37,000 was a blow to my stomach. You know, it was tough. I didn't have my kid at the time, thank God, but it was a really tough blow to make. And I think, you know, in business, that's probably the biggest mistake. Like getting, because your contractor is going to make or break you.
Yep.
I mean, if you don't have somebody that's trustworthy, that's loyal, that's that knows what they're doing, that communicates well, that you know, is impeccable with their word, it can really blow up a deal. It can blow up the house. You know what I mean?
Yep.
I think personally, though, one of the biggest mistakes that I've made is, and that will never happen again, is investing in myself. So, yeah, I know, right? I've spent, in the past 2 years, I've spent over... not investing myself. Let me correct that. So the biggest mistake.
I was like, wait a
minute. I know. Let me go back.
Okay.
Not
there has to be a catch.
Myself.
I kept thinking.
Yeah. Not investing myself. Right. So like, so for my early 20s, I just coasted throughout life. In the past 2 years, I've spent over $50,000 on self development. Mentors. I have a mentor. Pay him. Well, he's a business coach. $500 an hour. I pay him. The amount of knowledge that he gives me is, he should be charging me $1,000 an hour. I hope he doesn't hear this, but right. he should be charging me $1,000 an hour. I don't know why he didn't do it sooner.
It's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money.
And especially when you're in your 20s. You know what I'm saying? But the fact now you're able to not only, because everybody can take knowledge, but you said something very important at the beginning of the episode that's something that I also agree with. You know, when we listen to things, we try to write everything down and you're trying to apply everything. Now, when you're doing this meeting for only an hour, you're so locked in, but you're probably only trying to take away one or two things. And that's going to create the bigger impact over time. But it doesn't have to be that $500 an hour coach. I only charge $499 an hour to talk to people. Mm-hmm. So people can hit me up.
Yeah.
Matt's sitting there like, oh, damn.
Like, damn, am I about to get an invoice for this?
You got
to
say.
I thought this was just going to be for fun and like talking, get to know each other.
We'll send you the bill.
Yeah.
No, but, you know, on that level, like, you know, there's plenty of great coaches out there that you can, it works with your budget. Yeah. You know, you can find somebody, you can find books. I mean, investing in yourself. So I got nervous when you said that I'll never invest in myself again. Nah, I'm like, oh, boy. That's incredible.
What about you though? Like, what's the biggest personal mistake that you will never make again?
Oof. Oh boy.
Head first, baby. Dive head first.
Yeah, no. I mean, I think in business for sure, it's, you know, because I've started things. I've started companies. I had a hat company that failed. I told myself that was going to really make me rich. That did not. I had a beard oil company. I still think at some point I can circle back to that.
You got an impeccable beard, bro.
Thank
the beard is just extraordinary.
I have a significant individual in my life right now that is trying to convince me to shave my beard. Can you go pan over to him, please, to show the reaction there? So you say no, right? But you look nice and trim, though. I got to be honest with you.
It's if I shave this, yeah. I look like a 17-year-old. Right. My wife calls herself a pedophilia because she's like, I feel like you're 16 years old. I'm 33 years old. I can't even do this. You know?
That's how I feel for sure. So I think I can circle back to that. But I will never convince myself that I'm going to go all into something and then not go all in. And it's deeper than just in business, because that's also in my personal relationships, too. I've made not one, but an incredible amount of mistakes when it comes to personal relationships, whether that be in my marriage, whether that be with my mother, people that are really close to me. I've made significant mistakes, but I've learned from them. Because of the impact of words. I will never personally, and this is, I'm exposing myself, but it is what it is. I have attacked many people in my life.
sorry, my throat.
My bad, go ahead.
Let me clear my throat.
I have attacked many people in my life by disrespecting them verbally. It's kind of how I grew up, Italian household. You say a lot of things, you fly off the handle, and it's like you wake up the next day. And you just say sorry. And it just goes away.
Mm-hmm.
And I never dealt with those issues until I've been with a therapist now over 6 years now. I really took time to dive into why that was happening. But I truly believe now that relationships need to end when there's disrespect. You know, and I will never personally attack somebody. Again, I don't want to say... Never, because if you do something crazy to my daughter, I don't know how I'm not going to disrespect
you. Right,
you know what
right,
I mean?
Yeah,
but me as a man, to somebody close in my life, I never want to be that ever again. So I hope it never happens again. And I'm going to do everything in my power to make sure it doesn't.
What do you think that, how are you going to avoid that ever happening? Like, what's disrespect? Because then it gets mm-hmm. into very like subjective discussions or like experiences,
For me, you know, I know how to push people's buttons.
Yeah.
I really have a knack for singling, you know, weaknesses out, highlighting them, because I used to use it as leverage for myself to look better. It was extreme insecurity in myself. I always put out a confident product.
Right.
And I really wasn't confident in myself. I was confident in my ability to outwork people, but I was more confident in my ability to, I'm going to get in your head. And again, competition's competition. That's one thing. But the personal, you know, the verbal abuse, and I'm using abuse as a broader term.
Right, right.
But I don't think in any relationship that I ever get in ever again, that there needs to be a point in time where I am, you know, using profane language against somebody else's character. These are the things that I work on daily through my relationship with a higher power. And it's experiences in my life along the way that have really molded the person that I am today.
Right.
So I think to answer the question, though, abuse is a scale. It's a very large scale, but the disrespect, it can be something very simple, but I'm not going to attack somebody's personal feelings.
Fair.
You know,
fair.
Like I can be wrong and I can disagree with a lot of people. And I know that I do. I don't have to disrespect them, you know, and that's in, again, it's in a marriage. It's in a father, daughter, a father to son. It's in whatever it is. I do not ever have to disrespect somebody.
I respect it. Yeah, I respect it.
Yeah, man. You got me deep, huh?
I love that. Love that.
We good, CV? Yeah. I see a lot of camera switching over there. My man is behind the scenes over there. Best advice that I've asked this pretty much on every podcast now. Best advice you've ever received and why?
Man, I love this. This is getting my brain turning. This is like a chess battle in my fucking head. The best advice that I've ever received, don't make the same mistake twice, right? And that's kind of like with anything in life, with relationships, you know, don't be disrespectful again twice, right? Don't give a contractor 50% not on a credit card without signing contracts twice. Mm-hmm. If we just get better 1% every day, you know, the world is yours for the taking. You know, now we're talking about the universe, right? It's if you learn, I think first of it comes with being self-aware, right? Mm-hmm. Like we talk a lot about self-awareness. Like you're talking about never being disrespectful. That comes with being self-aware. And maybe what initiated it was seeing a therapist. Mm-hmm. And now you're more self-aware. Now you're a better man because of it, right? Mm-hmm. So being self-aware, self-reflecting, never making the same mistake twice in anything that you do. And you can apply this to anything in life, whether it be your relationships, whether it be to business, whether it be to fitness, whether it be to eating on a day-to-day basis. You know, always pursue to be the best version of yourself. And the way that you do that is just 1% every day. Reflect on your failures. Don't make the same mistake twice.
Deep.
Deep.
Real deep.
Deep.
Matt, where can, and this is your camera here, where can everybody find you and connect with you?
Yeah. Realestate_Ramos on Instagram. Matt Ramos on Facebook. Shoot me a message. You want to learn anything about real estate, anything about business, or if you want to improve as a human, I'm here for it. Dave's here for it. I appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, man. No, I appreciate Sean, you know, because he left here. I'm telling you, as soon as Sean left here, he said, I got to connect you to Matt. And it was a must for him. And I think he literally walked out of here. And you know, when people talk, you know, and again, I met Sean years ago at his house. Actually, he doesn't remember this. We spoke about it a little bit. He doesn't really remember it. But we were just in two completely different spaces. And his sister, over the years, has been saying, yo, man, you guys got to connect. And we're like, yeah, sure.
Yeah,
sure, no problem.
Right.
So I'm very grateful for him. I love what you do, man.
Appreciate you, man.
I really do. I love the message you put out. There's not many business models and, I guess, individuals that, you know, I know that are really trying to assist other individuals' financial freedom. And I think you have the ability to do it through a proven model. And like I said, this isn't just talk. Like, we're going to go make a deal.
I love it.
You know? Yeah. So I'm very grateful for you coming on and doing this with us. The last thing I want to leave people with is, for whatever reason, when we connected, you sent the calendar invite to me, right? And it said podcasts and it said changing lives. Why did you title it that?
Because the new era mantra, the new era mindset is to impact people around me. People have heard my story now. I've been in very dark places, like very dark places mentally, physically, chemically, right? I had to climb my way out of it. Wasn't easy. I'm not the smartest person. I had a 1.4 GPA my freshman year of college. 1.4. That's fucking
trash.
Horrible.
Basura,
yep,
if you will.
Basura, yeah. That's why my mom was like, you got to do something about this. You got to either quit football. If you can't handle it, quit football or figure it out. So I quit football, figured it out, and I got a 2.8 GPA, but I got better. But I was never smartest in school. You know, my purpose in life isn't to make a fuck ton of money. My purpose in life is to make a fuck ton of money with a fuck ton of people, right? Because you are only as good as the person to your right and left of you, right? I've been born and raised in a team atmosphere, baseball, football, whatever it is. Everybody has the same goal in mind, right? And there's so much room at the top for other people. Sometimes people just need a trampoline underneath their feet to help get them up there, right? And I hope to be that trampoline. I hope to be that catapult. That's kind of the mindset behind that, changing lives. Because what you do, you're changing lives. You know, listening to all your clips on Instagram, like, it resonates with me. And again, I'm grateful for Sean for putting us in touch, because everything that you say resonates with me. I might not agree with everything, but that's great, because challenging ideas is what makes us better as people, right? Mm-hmm. That's how we're planning on going to the Mars. That's how electric vehicles were made. That's how great organizations, Amazon, X now, Twitter, whatever it may be, Facebook. That's how these companies were created, by challenging ideas and challenging the status quo. That's what you do. That's what you're doing on your podcast. And that's what I'm doing in my company. And, you know, together, I think it's a way to change lives.
Mm. Well, I think we've found the episode title for this episode. So again, Matt, very grateful for you. Thank you for coming on, my brother. Guys, we are very thankful to you, the listener, whether you've listened to one or 159, we say thank you. Share this episode, because without sharing it, the word doesn't spread. It's been an incredible journey thus far, but we're really just starting to scratch the surface, and I promise you that. You can shop the latest merch at nosnoozeshop.com. And as always, stop snoozing.
Get up and get after it.
I'm ready to run through a fucking wall, Matt.
Let's go, dude. That was dope.
Thank you guys for tuning in. That's another epi in the books. You can follow us on Instagram at NoSnooze Podcast and leave us a 5-star review wherever you listen to us. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, No Snooze. Shop the latest merch at NoSnoozeShop.com. Come on.